Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. Welcome to the Roguecast for October 7th. We have a bunch of news. This is a big week of comics. We're going to get right into it.
It's not just a big week. It's like the biggest week of all time.
It may be the biggest week of all time.
I like to say ginormous.
Nick says ginormous.
I like to say biggie-sized or way puffy.
Yep.
I just think of McDonald's, though.
Wendy's.
Oh, that's right. It's Wendy's.
Yeah.
Supersizes.
Yes, exactly. All right. So, news for October. We've covered this every week, but we'll keep hitting it. Reading with Rogues is next week. We're doing Revival. That is going to be October 13th at Mambo House. Ladies Night is going to be October 14th at Palermo's. Gaming with Rogues will be at Forbidden Island. It will be Forbidden Island at Lamppost Coffee in Round Rock.
You don't know Lamppost Coffee might be at Forbidden Island.
It's possible. That'll be on Monday, October 19th. For those of you who have not gotten your Rogue card yet, if you've been considering it, first of all, this week would be a good week because there's going to be all kinds of picks that you might want to pick up, and you get a bonus discount on that.
That's true.
But the other reason is, one of the benefits of the Rogue card is occasional game sessions run by experienced DMs such as myself and Dave.
Right.
And our first one is going to be on Sunday, October 25th. It is a game called Dread, which we've talked about on this podcast before. And there's more details in the Rogue card membership email.
Right. So if you've got a Rogue card, you might have already been informed of this.
And if you didn't, there are slots for up to six people in the session. I believe we've only got two or three filled so far.
Yep.
So there's still room to get in on the first game session, and there will be more such cool stuff in the future.
And essentially, Dread is you know, if you happen to miss those past ones, it's a horror role-playing game.
Yep.
And so you're going to be in a scary horror movie-type situation. There's a good chance you'll get killed, but it's going to be fun along the way.
Yep.
I mean, the big thing is you use a Jenga tower.
You use a Jenga tower, yes.
And I really wanted to say that to up the level of difficulty, Dave, you have to use, what was it, the Nerf gun?
The video of the Nerf gun with rubber band gun.
Rubber band gun, yes. Shooting out the different Jenga tiles. That's what you have to have them use.
That sounds like a great idea. That couldn't go wrong.
Then in October 30th and 31st, we'll be out at Wizard World with our first booth over there. And back at the store on October 31st, we'll be doing Halloween Comic Fest with a variety of cool single issues, which we've talked about over the period of time. You can go to HalloweenComicFest.com and see the whole list.
Word.
So that catches you up on Rogue News. And now we'll jump to all the various news that's going on this week. And there's been a fair amount.
Before you go into that, unless this gets posted tonight, I just want to say it's Flash Week.
It is Flash Week.
Flash starts up again, and I guess Arrow as well.
Arrow's tomorrow night.
Okay.
When they hear this, they will be watching Arrow that night.
Yep, and iZombie also.
But I will say, beware your Facebook page as Flash goes up, because people will be posting spoilers
minutes after it starts, there will be Flash spoilers.
Probably before it starts.
Yes. Yep. All right, so news. Let's see, what do we want to cover first? Well, let's cover the weird one. Mass Effect is getting a theme park.
it's not already existing, is
no,
it?
No. Okay. Santa Clara based, not Santa Clara from
Lost Boys
presumably, they have a theme park called California's Great America, and they are going to launch a Mass Effect based attraction in 2016 that will have a performer take you to a distant planet where you'll fight larger than life foes through a blend of 3D and 4D effects. I don't know what 4D means. Time travel?
I think that's probably where there's like screens playing stuff, but there's some kind of interactive thing around you.
You get folded into the time stream of Mass Effect.
A husk will come up beside you and punch you. Yeah, that sounds like a rather specific thing, and not. I mean, that sounds like a specific attraction and not a full theme park.
Yeah,
I want a theme park where I'm like, you go and you fly the what's the name of their ship? I can't say.
Oh. Wow, I can't think of it either. Someone's going to yell at us if we don't come up with this.
Anyway,
I wanted a recreation of the Citadel. I didn't care about the ship.
there's a ton of cool locations. Honestly, just going inside, do they still at the Star Wars thing, Randy, at Disney World? As you're going through the line and stuff like that, doesn't like they make it look like all around you, like you're inside some Star Wars locations?
Well, you need. I'm a little worried it's not Disney, because Disney would definitely kill
the super
this.
Polish. Yeah, you yeah. Want the polish, but because that's what I want is like Mass Effect has a very distinct look, and you know if you can make me feel like I'm walking around somehow in the Citadel, my head would detonate.
You want the super immersive stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, those of you who have been yelling at the podcast for the last couple of minutes, the Normandy is the name of the
right,
ship.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a bunch of TV news, starting with HBO is looking at possibly doing a Watchmen TV show with Zack Snyder.
You know what? This is crazy, but like I have some interest in it. Like I will kind of poke at like any particular Watchmen thing.
But here's the thing: is it going to be a retelling? Is it going to be?
I would assume I bet it's going to be in some way, shape, or form the before Watchmen stories.
I think so.
Or unless they want to do the kind of crazy thing that nobody's ever touched post Watchmen,
the sequel.
Well, you know, at the end of Watchmen, if I'm not mistaken, the world is and in some sort of utopian peace.
Yeah.
But there's a risk of it fraying because who knows if Rorschach's journal will get out. And there's some indication that Night Owl and Silk Spectre are still operating, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's like they've got their kind of their groove back or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so there could be some sort of second era for superheroes. Now, everything that's not original Watchmen is superfluous.
Yep.
And yet, there's a part of me that would be like, oh, I got to take a look.
I bet Alan Moore, as a big fan of both TV and people continuing his work.
I'd love to be on the set to advise.
He's thrilled about this news.
I mean, you did play the Watchmen video game.
Sure.
Yeah.
Played the Watchmen video game, and we both of us have several of the Before Watchmen collections,
that's true.
Yeah.
The Before Watchmen stuff, although I'd probably say it was misguided, but I feel like I enjoyed the stories I've got from there. I don't particularly regret owning them, and it's even the kind of stuff I expect I'll revisit occasionally.
Yeah. Also, HBO is a pretty good pedigree. So
yeah.
Honestly, if he would just kind of produce it and good people might have a hand in it instead of him,
I'd be up for a retelling. Just do the Watchmen story again.
Right. I mean, the thing is,
you know, honestly, they were as faithful as I could hope to have to the storyline.
No Squid Monster,
but that didn't really matter. Honestly, they made a good choice for the movie.
They were, but to some extent, I do think that people always said that Watchmen would work better as a miniseries, and they probably are right. So it would be interesting to see it redone.
If they were to do it, and in some way, even like slightly. I don't want to say expand it a little bit, but give it a little bit of breathing room so that it wasn't all just his dialogue, some of which falls kind of leaden when spoken aloud.
Yeah.
I feel like it might work better in a theatrical environment, like on literally as a theater. But on the big screen, especially because Zack Snyder is not known for getting the greatest performances.
Right.
Even good actors sometimes gave some weak performances in that.
Yeah.
But you could definitely do better than he did. That much I don't disbelieve. But he was faithful to most of the big plot points.
Yeah,
you know, his problem wasn't faithfulness.
Let me ask you this: if your choice is between Zack Snyder involved in an HBO adaptation or who's good? Who's someone we'd like to do Watchmen?
I'm not good at this stuff.
So if there was someone good that you're like, oh, I like that guy, but they're going to do it for ABC.
Uh-huh.
Which is the better of those two? And I feel like Snyder at HBO is better because it's more likely that it's going to be truer to, like, if it was someone good doing it, like, at least it's on HBO.
Yeah, I suppose so. You can get that kind of at least the edge that it probably requires.
Yeah. Like, if this was being developed for the network, I'd be horrified.
Right.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
What, like, the craziest thing is, like, if they were saying new stories or even if it's in the past, okay, this would have to be in the past. If Rorschach kind of continued to sort of rise to the popular front of public opinion.
Yeah.
And he basically did become the Wolverine type guy that he sort of not spoofs, but subverts by showing, you know, sort of a dangerously sort of right wing and out there superhero.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining truly Alan Moore's worst nightmare would be Rorschach becoming the hero he subverted.
You mean kids having Rorschach lunchboxes and
Rorschach backpacks?
He would become. What would happen is he would become the who's the guy everybody likes on Walking Dead?
Rick?
Crossbow.
Oh, Daryl.
He'd become the Daryl of superheroes.
You think maybe a Rorschach versus Midnighter versus Batman miniseries?
I mean, truthfully, most people already think that Rorschach is true.
Rorschach is a very... I mean, that's always been the trick. I like Rorschach as a character a lot.
Yeah, sure.
In some ways, he is the most vibrant character that... Alan Moore deliberately gave him all the best lines and all that stuff.
Yeah.
At least as far as traditional superhero comics go, but also showed him to be dangerously unstable and messed up. We'll see.
Also in development at TV, this one at ABC, a couple weeks back we talked about the DC, or ABC rather, is where it's in development. DC is doing a sort of damage control-esque thing that's like insurance company. In the DC universe, in development, NBC. Well, ABC is developing actual Damage Control from Marvel.
Although Damage Control is not a super well-known property.
No, Damage Control is... Dwayne McDuffie created it.
Yeah.
And wrote most of it, yeah. Mid-80s to early 90s.
Yeah.
There were three miniseries, and they're going to collect all that in one big giant trade. It's fun stuff.
They were the guys who repaired superhero fight stuff, like knockdown buildings and all that.
Yeah, they were the ones who, whenever superhero fights, destroyed things, they were the ones who'd fix it and that kind of stuff.
And I guess they had, sort of advanced tech because I never actually read it.
Advanced tech and planning and that kind of stuff,
It makes so much sense in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, absolutely.
They can do that.
Yeah.
Basically, they've seen the corruption try to rebuild Hell's Kitchen, and they're like, oh, no, we can do this. Yeah. We're good.
You know, it'll never happen, but you know who I'd like to see do something like this is Aaron Sorkin. It is perfect for his sensibilities. He loves the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
To see him do sort of a behind-the-scenes in a superhero world.
I think you can never get Aaron Sorkin to do comics.
He'd never do this. He would never do it. I'm sure he's one of these guys who looks down on comics, and he's also pretty much done with TV. But in my dream casting, I would love to see him do it because I think he'd bring the right sensibility to it. But something like that, I mean, this could be what Sports Night or that kind of thing is, where it's sort of behind the scenes, very interesting characters. If you've never read Damage Control, it's a fun book, and it's a really neat idea.
Is there a lead character in Damage Control?
Yes, their comptroller, John something, is their sort of their lead. But it's an ensemble.
Comptroller.
He's one of these problem solvers guys. He's like J.K. Simmons' character from State Farm Insurance ads and that kind of thing. He's the guy who always has an answer for everything, who's unflappable and that kind of thing.
Right.
I'm excited by this, and I'm really excited by the notion of DC and Marvel going head to head with basically the same show on different networks.
Office Place superhero comedies.
Yes.
By
the way, is it going to be a comedy?
Yes. Yeah.
I wasn't sure how much they were running.
I honestly think Damage Control will win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, although they're in development,
DC does all right.
But here's the other thing: it could be that neither one of these goes to TV.
It's true.
They're both in development, so
I'm sort of vaguely disinterested in both of them. I don't have a horse in this race.
Yeah, but Dave, you don't watch the TV that much.
I don't have a pony in this fight. I don't have a what?
You're not a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I like it just fine.
Yes, you just don't like it as much as me and Nick.
Correct.
Where I want to live there.
I want to go to there.
I want to live on the helicarrier.
I want to go to that place.
All right, finally in the TV news, there is a BBC spinoff for Doctor Who that they're doing.
Right.
Specifically aimed at sort of young audiences, being run by a young adult author named Patrick Neal, who I don't know necessarily. This is set at the Coal Hill School, which is apparently goes all the way back to the very first Doctor Who episode.
Like back in the 60s.
Back in 1963.
Yeah.
And appeared in sort of the most recent series with Clara and Danny Pink working there and a lot of the school stuff going on there. They talk about in this article on Deadline.com about this is growing up in modern Britain but with monsters, it's called Class, and Patrick Ness, sorry. Patrick Neal.
Patrick Ness.
Yeah. He's talking about, can't wait for people to meet the heroes of Class, to meet the all-new villains and aliens, to remember the horrors of the darkest corners of existence are just about on par with having to pass your A-levels, which I guess is Brit for finals.
Yes, it is. Sounds right. I think this is a neat idea.
Me too.
I don't know quite, the school seems like it must be some sort of, Hellmouth magnet nexus thing.
I'm always for the expansion of Doctor Who. I mean, it's done it a couple of times in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of got Torchwood, and Torchwood became sort of this adult horror.
Really dark.
Really dark place. So it's going to be fun seeing sort of maybe not all ages, but sort of
in
the same... Well,
I'm guessing in the same way that Harry Potter was, but also went to some dark places.
Yeah, in the same sense that Doctor Who is all ages, even though it goes to some dark places.
Yeah.
It's sort of for everybody, but I like, you know, kid casts.
Now, here's the thing. Can they get a good kid cast?
Yeah, that's important.
I bet they can. There's a lot of good Brit actors.
They're going to be a bunch of 30-year-olds playing 15-year-olds?
Probably not. If I had to guess.
Yeah, it'd be, I mean, you know, I don't know what the, if the Brits do different solutions from us. You know, America at least tends to cast a little bit older, so you can sort of, you know, you've got somebody who's basically done going through their growth spurt.
Right.
And can just stick around for as long as you need him to play a high schooler. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool concept, though.
So DC, we talked about this a little while back. DC has a new initiative coming out called Superhero Girls.
Oh, right.
And they premiered, what is this? Is this a web series?
The thing, I'm not 100% sure. I think it is like a web series. The thing I saw was just a minute long sort of little promo intro thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sort of seems like, it's for sure like a product line too. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's going to be toys and clothes and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure, yeah.
Now, what's it called again?
Superhero Girls is what it's called.
What it seems to be is a, not unlike sort of like, you know, the Tiny Titans thing. It's a school drama, although more like a high school drama. The vibe I got was the movie Sky High.
Yeah.
If you've seen it, if the DC characters were, you know, teenagers at a school, and it seems like Amanda Waller is the principal. I wish it was, as always, I wish it was big Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
It's not, but,
yeah.
But it still looks, it looks like fun. It's not quite as cute as the Tiny Titans ones goes.
Right.
But it has that, you know, like I say, more Sky High, colorful looks to it. I didn't get a great sense for it, but it looked fun.
Yeah.
I think it'll be probably good for their target market. It's not like exclusively like a all-girls school or whatever, though the girls are the lead sort of characters.
Right.
But, you know, there are going to be male superheroes in the mix as well.
Cool. All right, so turning over to movies, there have been two big announcements, one from Marvel, one from DC. Marvel has announced that for the director of Thor 3, Ragnarok, is going to be...
Good luck, Randy.
Taika Waititi.
Sure.
Taika Waititi.
Taika
Waititi.
You remember that game?
I'm sure some of you were yelling at
them. You know that viral video that made its way around the other day of that weatherman saying, like, was it someplace in, like, New Zealand?
Yeah.
It had, like, 80,000 syllables.
And he nailed
just,
it.
Like, just bam, knocked it out.
Yep.
Or he said it in such a confident way that you don't know. It sounded like he knew what he was saying.
Well, this is a New Zealand director. This is the guy who did What We Do in the Shadows.
Right.
Isn't that what it's called?
What We Do in Shadows.
What We Do in Shadows.
Oh, the Flight of the Conchords horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a bunch of those. The Flight of the Conchords, basically troop of actors in a story about sort of slacker vampire losers.
He's going to be doing
Thor.
Thor.
You know, Marvel's been really good at this, at plucking somebody out and being like, you do this. I mean, they got the dude who did Bring It On to direct Ant-Man, and it worked out great.
That's true.
And the guy who did Captain America Winter Soldier had done what?
The brothers, they had done Community and that kind of thing, yeah. They have managed to find people who, you're like, it wouldn't be your first choice.
And they got that one guy who directed Cop Car for Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, hopefully that'll work. That's not them, that's Sony, and I don't give them credit for that until it pumps out.
I don't know. I've heard some
secret stuff. I wonder if there's some secret criteria. You know, is it just that they're like, we can tell these guys are talented, and they also have an enthusiasm for the property?
And also they're new enough we can still step on them a little bit?
Or they won't ask for super high paychecks?
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, is there, like, some secret criteria when they're asking them or that we don't know about?
Well, they seem to find people – they seem to mostly find people who have had one or two big indie hits.
Yeah.
I mean, Cop Car is an example, but there's also you know, the Russo Bros were coming from TV. Edgar Wright even was still sort of an indie filmmaker. I mean, he'd had
– In a weird way,
he had some pretty big hits.
But not really. All of his stuff is cult favorite.
Yeah.
Even Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, those are cult fandoms.
Those are cult movies,
yeah.
What I was going to say is it reminds me, it's like the cinematic equivalent of when Marvel started bringing in indie guys like Bendis and
Mark Miller,
like
I mean,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, and that sort of formed the basis of all their post-2000s creators.
Yeah.
Those are all guys that kind of came from smaller books.
Yeah.
And also, the people at Marvel are smart. Kevin Feige is smart. He looks at movies that have worked, and I know people loved that.
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows. I've been told to watch it numerous times.
Cult movie, though. Like, I wouldn't look at this and say that this guy is going to make an audience, you know, that'll thrill tens of millions, or make a movie that'll.
And I think that's why the cinematic universe works, and why it's been so good, is they don't look at the guy. They don't look at, say, Michael Bay or whoever directed the big blockbuster that year, and went, "Let's get them to do that blockbuster, but for us." They see somebody like, that guy has talent. We know the formula that we plug into things, and we think he can do something interesting within that formula.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's whatever they do to pick them, they seem pretty good.
Yep.
And by contrast, DC stuff often leaves us shrugging.
DC's pick is also, I mean, here's the thing. DC's pick is definitely of the same, wow, that guy?
Yeah.
Because
it's just that they don't have the proven track record.
They've picked up Seth Graham Smith, who is the guy who has written the book Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Okay.
He apparently has written the Lego Batman script.
Okay.
But he is directing The Flash. This is his first directing gig, and they're giving him The Flash.
That is strange. That's like sort of up there with some of the strange choices for the Spider-Man movies.
It's really odd that the writers on The Flash, the treatment is by Lord and Miller.
Yeah.
But Seth Graham Smith is going to write the script and direct the movie.
Who's the treatment people? Who are those?
Lego Movie.
Okay, right.
Various other things.
This one just leaves me kind of perplexed.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and also, the guy that they cast as Flash,
he's a young dude.
He's like a disinterested stoner.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
he looks like that dude in Fear the Walking Dead.
And I'm like, he's Flash? I just don't see it.
Well, it's funny because I know some of my friends would accuse me of a DC anti-DC bias here, which I definitely have, because I don't, none of their stuff ever works for me. But this is not dissimilar from Marvel's formula.
You don't necessarily have a full anti-DC bias, but, like, the movies have not proven themselves. But, like, you're going to watch Flash tonight.
Yes.
You're excited for it.
And my bias is that I want them to be better.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a DC hopeful.
Yes.
I would like for them to be, I hope they
I
do
think
better.
DC sometimes gets too comfortable with their people being, their audience being DC hopefuls.
Yeah.
And not full-on DC enthusiasts.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, because the thing is, this is not too far apart from what Marvel does. They picked out a guy who has some indie buzz, but he's never directed a movie before. And your first movie you're going to give him is The Flash?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Aquaman.
Whoa.
But this is The Flash. I don't know.
You're talking about the buzz that the show has made.
Yeah.
Sort of
this is
to
a,
capitalize
this
on.
This is a big character for them now, and I feel like they don't understand that.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
I'm a little perplexed as well, but I wish it well because I like The Flash. But yeah.
I would like it to be good, but I suspect it will not be. Finally, some comics news before we get into comics for the week. Two bits of Marvel news, some creative teams that have been announced. Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, who did the Daredevil run that we love, and everybody else on that book. I mean, from letterer on to colorist.
Yeah, it was.
They're moving that creative team over to Black Widow.
I was going to say, the entire creative team.
The entire creative team.
No one is changing.
which I believe, Dave, in this room, you're the least fan of Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
I like the character. And Nick, I believe you're actually a fan of the character.
I am. I'm a fan of both of the, there's only been two, right? Yelena Belova.
Been another somewhere, but.
I'm sure, but.
Two notables were in
those
the last
Those are the two notables, and I've
decade.
Liked them both. She's one of those ones, characters that has never really done sort of a long run on a comic that I've enjoyed. I mean, the last one by Nathan Edmondson and Phil Noto, I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, and seems to have done pretty well.
And it did well. But throwing Waid into the mix and his understanding of what makes a good comic and adding in Chris Samnee art, I mean, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
As the creative team bodes well. My thing is, like, I think I just like her best as an ensemble player.
Yeah.
And knowing Marvel at this point, they'll probably give her a good supporting cast.
I think that would be a big part of it, honestly, finding a good supporting cast. I think that was actually one of the most ingenious things they did with The Flash.
Yeah.
Honestly. And I like The Flash. I've actually read lots and lots of good stories with The Flash, and his supporting cast when Johns was doing it was mostly a few cops he knew and whoever was, he was married at the time, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And his wife. But giving him a set backup team was an ingenious idea.
Yeah, it really
even
was.
Giving her Natasha a romantic, you know, person to deal with would be fun.
And by the way, although I'm not as big on Arrow as I am on The Flash, that was also a fairly smart idea, though a bit of a weird one. The Oliver Queen, who used to be kind of a quintessential loner and bachelor on the show, they did sort of keep that, But they gave him, like, a whole rich family,
yep,
sister,
yep,
stuff, mm-hmm, that had never been even hinted at in the comics. And it worked pretty well. They found a good way to do it.
Yeah. All right. So the other announcement was just today, as you listen to this, they have announced that Power Man and Iron Fist are getting a new series.
A new
comic book series.
Right.
And it's written by David Walker, who, that's good and bad news. Like, I have not been feeling as Cyborg necessarily, but I really enjoyed his run on Shaft.
Right. He seemed to be exactly what I wanted with that, which is to say, you could take Shaft and you could kind of, like, it's the best known blaxploitation movie there is. Right,
right, right.
And you could have gone and, like, it's also been spoofed endlessly. The Beavis and Butthead movie opened with a spoof of the Shaft song. And so you could have gone, you know, you could have done a comic that was kind of campy. But if you watch the actual movie, it's actually a pretty straightforward detective mystery story that just kind of has a bit of a blaxploitation hook.
Right.
And he perfectly read the tarot cards on that, or read the tea leaves, and grabbed just the right stuff. He's like, I'm going to make it like the movie. I'm,
yep,
not going to, like, quip. In fact, if anything, I'm going to take it a slightly more hard-edged direction.
Yep.
He definitely, the man's got some skills.
Now here's the, yep, question. Did he take that same sort of approach with Cyborg? Because I didn't read Cyborg.
No.
Cyborg, I feel like a lot of the problems with Cyborg, you can lean on DC. It feels like DC problems, yeah.
Now, and I'm wondering if Marvel will be a better environment for
him. I think
him,
it will.
And maybe open him up to,
so,
what he was doing.
Here's what we know also. In addition to having a Walker writing it, Sanford Green, who did the Runaways series for Civil,
yeah,
War, or is doing the art. There's some, if you go to Comic Book Resources, there is a link with some art design stuff. They've done a new Iron Fist costume, which I don't particularly like, but I honestly don't think anybody's ever going to improve on the classic Iron Fist costume.
It's kind of a riff on
and,
the classic.
And they've got Luke Cage in sort of a, like a nice business suit, but under the suit he's got a yellow shirt that is like his classic yellow shirt. It's a cool sort of cartoony look. There's no specific announcement about what the book's contents are. It's going to be in a partnership, and it is going to acknowledge that sort of Luke Cage is married and has a daughter, that Iron Fist has gone through some things. He does say expect some old school characters like Tombstone and Black Mariah to show up. I'm really excited about this. I love these characters, especially when they're together. They haven't really done a series teaming them since the 90s Heroes for Hire.
No, I was
going to
say, they did a Power Man Iron Fist book, but it was with the new Power,
yeah,
Man.
It was not truly Davey,
yeah,
and I can't say his name. Luke. Those who kind of grew up in, like, the, I think, 70s and 80s, it was kind of a cult book.
Yeah.
You know, although at times, you know, it actually had a fairly decent long
run. It ran, like, 250 issues, yeah.
But people who read that era, they, you know, you say Power Man and Power Man and blank, and they know Iron Fist.
Yeah.
They were a duo.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that they've been apart so long in the comics.
Yeah.
So I think it's a smart idea to throw them back together again.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I hope this also means we'll get some collections of Power Man and Iron Fist stuff.
Yeah.
Because they've Epic collected some of the early stuff, but they haven't really done the later stuff that, like, Dwayne McDuffie was writing that
they're
I really
like. They're doing collections of Shang-Chi now, so I would imagine they'll be doing.
I mean, because Dwayne McDuffie wrote that book. Kurt Busiek wrote some of the early stuff,
yeah,
in that book. Priest, who was then James Owsley, I believe, wrote or edited on that book. It's,
yeah.
The other thing that's interesting about this is Marvel has been dinged a lot in some circles, like the Outhouse and some of these what we call social justice websites, you know.
Right.
But they have really been dinged for having maybe getting better in diversity in terms of characters, but not in terms of creators.
Right.
And this is two creators of color working on some of the biggest person of color characters.
Right.
Biggest African American color character,
yep,
in comics. So.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing for them to sort of,
yeah,
be addressing.
Hopefully, especially given, you know, that there's a sort of extra weight that's going to be on it. And it's,
yeah,
not really fair, but, you know, because of that, I really do hope these come off.
Yeah, I want it to be good.
Yeah.
So
the Black Panther book that's coming up as well.
Yeah. Black Panther book, the guy that they announced, we talked about that, got picked up for one of the Genius Grants.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he's like a notable
that.
Author. So this may be the first time we've ever seen that in comics.
You know, I think the most important thing I need to get from a Luke and Danny comic is,
yeah,
that buddy vibe.
Yeah,
it's
got to be fun.
There's got to be banter, but it can't be just throwaway banter. There's got to be like a real friendship,
yeah,
underneath and all,
yeah,
that stuff.
Yep.
I think giving them a bit of a sense of history, Are they going to, like, allow them to sort of age a little bit? I know at one point that, like...
Well, they talk about... Yeah, they want to address that they've changed because...
It's almost like more like two dads, in a way, than it is, like, two late 20s or early 30s guys that they might have been back in the day.
Well, it's a couple of guys who... I mean, they're probably still in their 30s. That's how Marvel Time works.
Yeah.
But... It's a couple of guys who were friends in high school or college who now have lives and are friends again.
Right.
That's going to be a different thing, and you could do a lot of fun stuff with that.
Yep.
I hope they go that way. I hope we see some fun stuff. The noise they're making so far sound good. The creative team is solid. I'm very excited about this book.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out in 2016, as does the Black Widow. All right, we'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about the biggest week of comics to date. We're talking comics for the week of October 7th, and y'all may have noticed, I don't know if we've specifically pointed this out, that September was kind of a weird month.
It was.
It was a five-week month, which means everything was sort of diffused a little bit. DC Spread put a bunch of annuals out. Secret Wars didn't come out.
Secret Wars was delayed.
There was any number of weird things, like no big initiatives. The moon
became as blood.
It's true.
But this first Wednesday in October.
So it's almost like they've been saving up. Because instead of, say, producing things at a time when everyone might have some money to spend and get some new stuff, they waited and released everything new on the same week.
You know what it is? It's a rope-a-dope thing.
Yeah.
And this is the week that we get hit with the Sunday Punch.
This is their knockout punch?
Yeah.
I saw a friend of mine on Facebook saying that he half expected comic shops to have a mortgage specialist on hand so that people could talk about refinancing options so they could afford their comics this week. It's not quite that bad, but it is pretty crazy.
If you tend to get like one or two comics, you might find four or five this week. If you get five or six, you're going to find eight or ten.
My favorite weeks of comics.
It did not beat out my favorite week of comics so far, which is the one that had 1872 and Archie number one and some of that.
I don't think you have my level of Marvel excitement.
So. No, I do not have your level of Marvel excitement. I'm not sure anyone. I'm not sure Stan Lee has your level of Marvel excitement.
No, he doesn't.
The word excitement can be replaced with lust.
Yes, Marvel lust. Nick's Marvel lust. But one thing before we get into this. The one thing we didn't get, thanks to the magic that is Diamond, is Darth Vader trades.
Right.
They were supposed to hit this week.
We would really like to have had those.
They decided instead to not send us any of those.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll have them by Thursday or Friday. Right. If not, we'll have them by next week.
Nick yelled at him and said, send us those books or die, and they may.
Yeah, we were not able to force choke them and get it. If we could, we would have.
They do hit, and hopefully in a couple of days, know that it's a recommended book.
Almost feels that Darth Vader is the best Star Wars book.
It is Amanda's favorite, I know, and it is.
Yeah, Star Wars is the best one.
Some weeks it is my favorite as well. I know Dave favors Star Wars, and this week I favor Star Wars too. We'll talk about that. But yeah, there's so much this week. We're just gonna dive into it.
All right,
Dave. What is your favorite giant-sized book this week?
My favorite giant-sized book this week is one that I think we all really liked.
Yes.
They loved the first issue of the new Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep.
This looks like kind of in the new, in the Marvel relaunch, this may be my go-to book.
Yeah.
But this is not just a Spider-Man story, although I'll get to the Spider-Man story in a minute, but it also has short backup features that preview all of the other books sort of in the Spider-Man universe.
Little four pages, right? They're small.
Yeah, they're pretty brisk, but they get actually a lot done.
They actually tell a concise story, or for the most part.
And they feature the creative teams from those other books, like Silk, Spider-Woman,
Spidey 2099, and something else.
And the Miles Morales Spider-Man book that's coming.
Spider-Woman,
and is that Spider-Verse?
It's and Spider-Verse. Web Warriors.
Anyway, the main story, we were told at some point that the all-new, what are they calling this relaunch?
All-new, all-different.
That was going to be set 8 months after the events of Secret Wars.
Yeah, there's no reference to it anywhere here.
And my guess is that I believe that is probably the case.
Yeah.
But I think they didn't do that because if they did an 8 months after Secret Wars opening, people would be, new readers who might just be thinking of the first issue would be like, oh, I got to go read something first.
And also everyone would be coming in here going, did Secret Wars finish? Like, no, sorry, there's still three more issues.
But it does. These stories begin in media res with sort of the new status quo.
Yep.
So here, Peter Parker is running his company. Is it Parker Industries?
Parker Industries.
Yeah. And he's just released sort of a new. What is it? The equivalent of like the
It's like an iPhone type thing, but it has
it's a watch.
It connects to the internet. It has all kinds of cool features.
Yep.
Basically, and there's all kinds. It seems like Peter Parker has finally embraced his sort of genius and right. and become sort of a Reed Richards sort.
Right, and a little bit of a Tony Stark too. Although they make a point. That he's
there's
not,
a joke there, and it's yeah. awesome.
And I like they leaned into that because it would have been easy to criticize this book as, oh, so he's got a secret identity, Spider-Man is his bodyguard, is what they say.
Yep.
It is sort of a poor man's Tony Stark. And so they lean into that joke, and they make a couple references to it to show that, no, we're not just ripping off Iron Man and making Spider-Man right. into Iron Man.
And we're aware, yeah, they're aware of it.
I have to say, Dan Slott is a pretty sly writer and really knows Spider-Man well because... I just was drawn in from page one.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's crazy that a book that begins with sort of Spider-Man, you know, in Shanghai, having a team up with
Mockingbird.
Mockingbird, yeah.
One of my favorite characters.
Gets a new character design.
In the Spider-Mobile.
Yep.
That's suddenly a lot to come at you pretty quickly, and it's like a great opening, though. It's hilarious and cool.
The new Spider-Mobile is awesome.
Yes. Words one would not have expected to
say. No, it's like the Batmobile. It's fantastic.
And it has auto-tune in it.
Yes, it has auto-tune, which is used to hilarious. This is also a really funny comic.
It is. Yes. I was pleased to see that, you know, yeah, despite his new status, Peter Parker's still Peter Parker.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does seem to be a bit more confident and self-aware than of what's going on. Usually he's kind of stumbling through things awkwardly, and here he's got it together a little bit.
You know, what's funny is this is a natural evolution of what they did with Superior, where Doc Ock sort of took Spider-Man's powers and abilities and basically took his personality.
It forced him to grow up.
Yeah, and then when Peter Parker got his body back, he realized, oh, sure, Ock is a body-stealing maniac, but he had some good ideas.
Right.
And so this is a natural thing for him to say, well, I'm going to embrace this new status quo I've been left with and try to be more of a grown-up.
Yep. Go ahead, Nick.
No, I don't want to spoil a ton of this, so I'm going
to... Yeah, I don't want to say too much either. There's an ongoing mystery involving a group that's usually a pretty boring supervillain group, but is used to cool effect in here. It's like a rethink of them.
Yep.
There's a new love interest for Peter Parker, which was kind of
several
fun.
New supporting cast.
Yep, some new supporting
cast members are great.
Oh, and man, I don't want to give away who it is, but the guy they brought in to help him with the Spider-Man
stuff—that's
a nod back to some of the Civil War, Secret War stuff, and it was great.
Yep, and a character who's been around from before that too.
Early on, he's a 70s character,
and
I think.
And we also get to see a lot of basically the Superior Spider-Man cast.
Yeah.
All the scientists and things like that.
And along with tons of cool action. There's good fight scenes.
This is art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, who I like a lot. This is a continuation of everything Slott's been doing since he took over and did way back on Brand New Day.
Yep.
Then did Superior, then did the new Amazing. It's a push forward in the same way. It is of a piece with what you've been reading. Like, if you've been reading the Spider-Man stuff, you're going to like this. But it's also a really strong jumping on point. Like, you don't have to know anything.
I was going
to
say, it's very smartly written in the sense that you don't have to read anything. This is Spider-Man. You have to know Spider-Man, and you can jump in.
Back when Pete married MJ back in the 90s, I was among those people who, although I bought lots of the comics that came out for them, including McFarlane and Michelinie's, famous run on it.
Yeah.
And really liked it. I thought that those were, they were doing pretty much classic Spider-Man stuff. It's just that he could occasionally go home and unload his problems a little bit on his wife.
Yeah.
And talk to her, and I felt like that was kind of cool. He still had lots of problems, but he just had a bit of a sounding board and, but at the time, I was also thinking, I was like, oh, I think Quesada and other guys have a point that, he's at his most vibrant when he's the single Peter Parker who's dating, and, when you get married, it kind of forces you to age the character a little bit. But I've turned around a bit on that, and I like these stories that have kind of been involving him while still keeping him the classic Peter Parker.
See, and that is my one gripe, is that I feel like with this status quo, it would have made a lot of sense if he was married and had a kid.
Right. Right.
And I feel like this would have been a great time to go ahead and bring him back. And since they're going to redo, they're reshaping the world a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like the editorial stricture of still, Spider-Man being single is still there, and that's too bad. Because I feel like this, as interesting as it is, it would have been even better if they had brought back Mary Jane and his daughter.
Right.
But, you know, that,
at the same time, bouncing around a whole lot between Peter Parker's status quos would have been, or alternate versions of,
yes,
it might have been confusing, and instead Marvel continues to do what they've been good at, and where, what sort of separates them from DC is that they'll evolve their sort of storylines, but yeah, they never redo their characters, yeah, if they can help it.
Yeah. No, it's a minor gripe at best. And those who liked Renew Your Vows will see a familiar character in one of the stories here.
Yep.
Which was a surprise.
I don't know what character y'all are referring, what you're referring
no,
to.
No, it's later on.
Okay. So, and there are backup stories in here. There's a, I'm just going to mention one or two bits from the Spider-Man 2099.
That was
great.
One of
these ones, they set up the status quo of the new books. I don't believe any of these are preview pages just taken out of the new books.
They're no, small stories for...
But they're lead-ins to them, and they're good lead-ins. In particular, the Spider-Man 2099 does a good job of outlining or highlighting with a big difference between Peter Parker and a more burned out Spider-Man,
yeah,
you know, Spider-Man 2099, and what they're going to do to sort of channel that.
Yeah.
I thought it was it's a really, what they're hinting at is really cool.
Well, what's interesting, and we'll talk about this a little more when we, I think Nick probably has both in his stack, but this is the week when Marvel puts out a lot of its samplers for the all-new stuff.
Right.
So Spider-Man, in addition to being its own issue, is the all-new launching point for the Marvel, for the Spider-Man books. And there's similar things for Avengers this week and for sort of the non-affiliated books that are,
yeah,
their little 8-page stories that are not, yeah, going to be in the main books but will be in the trades. And they're sort of a sampler. This is what, right, Marvel's been doing
for
years.
You're getting a rather huge glimpse of what Marvel's going to be doing for the next,
right,
several years.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And it's the Spider-Universe, may be my favorite part of Marvel right now.
I love the Silk one.
The Silk one's
really good.
Because the Sue right now sets up a new status quo for her, too.
Well, it sets up a new status quo, but it also brings about a new... basically group that people have to deal with, and it's the Goblin Nation, which I think
I like their take on that.
I love,
yeah,
that is actually now like a henchman group.
Like a gang,
a,
yeah,
gang, and it's going to be kind of what a lot of heroes are going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
they're popping up.
And I like her new ally slash boss slash, we'll let people find out who that is.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of confidence in Robbie Thompson's writing.
Yeah.
He's doing
the Spidey
good
book, too.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, then there's also the Spider-Woman story.
Which is by the same creative team.
Yep.
A fun
time-hopping Web Warriors.
The Web Warriors was cool.
I kind of liked it. I was not big on Spider-Verse from Civil War, so...
But Mike Costa. It's Mike Costa,
It's Mike Costa, who was writing Civil War as well.
Yeah, or Secret Wars.
Secret Wars of Spider-Verse, which is, this is very much spun out of.
Yeah.
But this is a stronger issue.
You know, some of their little throwaway bits in this, this is like sort of this is the 1602 version,
yeah,
of some characters you see in the beginning.
Yeah.
And there's a 1602 Kraven.
Yeah.
And Kraven the Hunter, who is described as Karnov is a butcher from the steppes of Muscovy who knows only thieving and killing. And, you know,
yeah,
he's like this sort of like Cossack looking guy.
Yeah.
It was a cool retool that, as they all are.
It's a great team. I like all those.
Yeah.
This one reminded me of what I liked about,
Spider-Verse?
No. What was the Exiles?
Oh, yeah.
The world hopping thing that tended to be alternate universe versions of X-Men, but also had other Marvel characters in it.
Yeah. Place.
And then lastly, there's a really good little story with Miles Morales.
Spider-Man.
And it's a neat... What's kind of crazy about this is that it actually follows on the heels of the Spider-Woman story.
Yeah, there's a little connection.
There's some interesting... There's more connective tissue between these little shorts than you would normally get. And sets up one of the big bads of probably the whole Spider-Verse, I'm guessing. But also specific to Miles Morales. So anyway... an issue which gives you a ton for your money.
Yeah, a great book. This could have been any of our picks.
Yeah.
We all really liked it.
In a smaller week, this was...
Yeah. Nick, what Marvel book is your pick?
Why do you think it's a Marvel book?
Because we're Marvel whores.
You're Nick.
and four of the six books we're picking this week are Marvel.
That's true.
You're Nick, the Terror of the Steps.
I'll take it. Mine is a Marvel book. It is Doctor Strange number one, as if you had any doubt.
You've been anticipating it.
I have been anticipating. I like what Jason Aaron has done with Thor, and Doctor Strange seems like a really interesting character for him to sort of get in the mindset of.
Mm-hmm.
It is sort of not a huge reimagining of Doctor Strange, because basically what you know is... You know, he's the Sorcerer Supreme.
He does seem to have an axe, which I don't remember from previous incarnations.
Although that doesn't really show up much.
Actually,
it does.
But they're magical manifestations of weapons.
Right.
He actually will bring about an axe or a sword, whatever he needs to fight whatever foe he's doing.
Okay.
And it's kind of interesting because he's got
you know, he's got a huge arsenal at his, you know, beck and call, so why not have a magical axe or a magical sword that he can mess with?
Because mages can't use axes, Nick. They have they're not proficient. They have -4 to hit.
He is the Sorcerer Supreme.
You're saying he multiclassed?
He multiclassed like no tomorrow, sir.
I believe he is somebody that says you're the Sorcerer Supreme start acting like it at one point.
I guess because I thought Dr. Strange only used like darts and maybe a dagger.
But the cool thing is, very first page, it's his entire origin. That's all you need to know. It's covered completely. Using actual panels from, is it Lee and Ditko?
Yeah, I think that is Ditko stuff.
Yeah.
Primarily Ditko.
Yeah, basically using some of those panels and then jumping into the here and now where Strange is actually fighting sort of an extraplanar villain. The artwork here is Chris Bacala, so it is kind of trippy at times, but it sort of works with that kind of Doctor Strange oddness.
He has a kind of cartoony, exaggerated style that's like slightly gothic, overlay on like a what might have once been like a slightly manga.
And the first
style.
Few pages do feel a little chaotic. I will not disregard that, but there is also a reason for it.
Right, there's sort of dream world type stuff.
Yeah, there is a dream world type stuff. I'm not going to give away any of the big points to it, but it is very cool. And what Jason Aaron's done was sort of the Strange character, he's made him sort of, you know, the guy who's after women, very kind of Tony Stark.
Right.
Which has been around before. He has been a ladies guy.
Fraction was the guy.
Fraction brought that in, yeah.
But Vaughn used it in
a little bit.
And here it's not like you bashed over the head with him needing a woman or
anything. But it's a little
like
bit more upfront than ever. Like, people kind of know his reputation.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a ladies' man.
He is a ladies' man.
You know, that's actually not a bad thing to give him a little more definition.
No, I mean, a lot of the times he comes off as very, you know, one-dimensional.
He's sort of the aloof, intelligent guy who's beyond our
And
knowledge.
Giving him a little more humanity and sort of vulnerability is not a bad thing to make him relatable.
It feels a little bit more like what they might do, possibly, we'll see, when they get around to the movie version.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's what we're getting a little bit of. But I love how Bacala does his cape. It's more of like this flowing entity that he uses.
Like Spawn?
I was going to say
it's like Spawn, but he uses it in other ways than what Spawn did. I mean, he actually uses it as a magic carpet that he flies on for a moment, which I thought was kind of cool. And also, there's a scene later on where he's actually just walking in New York, and the way Mark Waid and Marcus Martin did it at the Paula Rivera originally gave Daredevil sort of that new sense of seeing.
Right.
Bacala and Aaron have given Doctor Strange this new way of looking at things, and the reader can see how he sees the world.
Right.
Which is very interesting.
It's the point. Literally, what they look like they've done in here is they've left all the stuff, but these strange magical things that he's seeing is not colored in it. So it falls into stark black and white. But then there's these vivid, colorful things coiling around other dimensional aliens,
parasites,
and
things like that. They're described
magical,
as sort of
interdimensional bacteria.
Yeah,
is what he says
it's just kind of interesting. He's using his third eye, of course.
He seems to be sort of a guy for hire here. They don't mention like he gets payment. But it's almost like sort of people who need him get in touch with him bit A-team style.
Yeah. Okay.
It's basically if people hear about him.
Kind of been before.
People hear about him through stories. It's sort of like an urban legend, and they come to his place in Greenwich, his Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's just kind of cool. There's also a scene with a couple of other magic users of the Marvel Universe.
Seems like they hang out.
Which does seem like they do meet occasionally and talk about what you would expect, like the big bads, things on the horizon, things like that.
Is that Brother Voodoo?
It is Brother Voodoo.
Nice.
There's also an inclusion of a member of Alpha Flight that I am very
Shaman?
Excited. Yes.
Nice.
I am very excited to
no
see
No Marina.
Him. No, I mean, I think he gets kind of, I mean, no one remembers poor Shaman.
Right.
And to see him sort of be cast as a major force in the magic.
Well, that
Marvel
makes
universe.
Sense. It's kind of cool to see some of all the magic guys coming together. That's not something Marvel's done a lot of, so.
But there is talk of a bigger threat. There's a something on the horizon. So laying groundwork for that. There's a backup with Kevin Nolan artwork that sort of
talks of this big threat that's coming that is fantastic.
Well, Doctor Strange has famously been unable to sustain an ongoing series for a long time.
Yes, this is the first time we've gotten a new ongoing in how many years?
It's been a long time.
I think 20, 30?
Since the 90s, something. Maybe. Yeah.
But with Jason Aaron sort of in the driver's seat, I kind of see it going for a little while.
I'm glad to hear it's good. I didn't get a chance to read it because there's so much to read this week, but it's one of those I'm going to take with me and take a look at because I'm excited about the notion, and I like Jason Aaron's stuff.
Yeah. I highly recommend this one.
All right, so I didn't pick a Marvel book.
What?
Yeah, sorry.
No pay for you.
Instead, I picked an Image book. And surprise, surprise, it's Brian K. Vaughan's book. So this is the book that from Image Expo that I was the most excited about. It's Brian K. Vaughan writing. It's Cliff Chang on art. You may know Cliff Chang from the Wonder Woman relaunch from New 52. He's got this really gorgeous style.
You know what's interesting? I love Cliff Chang's art.
Yeah.
I had not realized it was him.
Really?
When I was reading it, because I think maybe like the inking style or something is a little different from the more kind of like... almost Batman animated series-esque like look that they had on the Wonder Woman one.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I should have remembered.
Yeah, this totally looks like Cliff Chang stuff to me.
But yeah, it did not immediately strike me as Cliff Chang.
But
it struck me as good, though.
I love this art. This is basically a series about... It's set in 1986, and it is about some girls who ride bikes and deliver newspapers around town in the wee hours of the morning. And they have a run-in with some creepy costumed guys who are... trying to steal their papers. Then they run in with some creepy costume guys, and they're not sure what they're doing, and they're actually like but not teenagers, but like costume guys.
Otherworldly about them,
and they run into something otherworldly. There's a big thing at the end that maybe hints toward what the series is going to be about. It's a big double-sized issue. This is a lot of character development. The four main characters are really interesting, and in a way, it's not unlike something like Lumberjanes or one of those.
Right.
But it also, as Nick pointed out, it has a very Stephen King vibe.
Yeah, the best description I've heard from the web that I was, it's Stand By Me by way of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting concept, and yeah. I really enjoyed it, but yeah. I do
it does
like...
have something of it, yeah, because it's all female characters, all the leads are, it would also be a notably female Stand By Me.
Right. Yeah, but the characters are great, the dialogue, as always, with Vaughn is great, and he's always a big ideas guy, so... although we really only have a slightest hint of what the book's going to be about in here, I'm excited to see where this is going.
Big stuff does happen in the first issue. It's
sure.
That you can't quite interpret every little moment.
You can't quite get the kind of context.
Like, this is interesting, but the mystery, some mysteries are definitely set up.
But if you're reading Saga and We Stand on Guard, and you should be because they're both great books, this is another Brian K. Vaughan book. We live in sort of a golden age for me because Vaughan is my favorite writer, mm-hmm. and he's doing three monthly books right
and
now.
He's devoted himself to comics after a few years slumming in the TV world.
That's right. So this is great and very different from everything else he's doing. So I really like it, and I was very happy with. My cheater pick this week, because there's so much stuff, of course we have cheater picks, is Jughead, number one. Written by Chip Zdarsky and art by Squirrel Girl's Erica Henderson.
This is
basically Jughead. There's a new principal introduced. Jughead, of course, being the guy who sort of resists authority. He has a sort of run-in with his principal. They change the food, which, if you know Jughead, is a huge problem.
Right. There's a funny bit where he's... Betty is, like, on campus is trying to, you know, gather signatures for... Like, it's sort of a serious cause.
Yeah.
And he's kind of scoffing at it a little bit. But, like, when they change the food, he's like, oh, my God!
Yeah. And then he faints. There's a quick little Game of Thrones riff in there that's a lot of fun. Basically, it's got a lot of the fun that I find in sort of Squirrel Girl or in Archie. It's not as good as the Archie comics have been, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The Wade Staples Archie is just so fantastic.
Zdarsky has you know always been a little bit more. I mean, he's an off kilter sense of humor guy.
Yeah,
he's really funny, but like Wade kind of has maybe a little bit more one foot in the mainstream.
Yeah,
so his Archie feels a little bit more like traditional Archie with a little bit more slyer humor. And Jughead is a little bit more off the beaten path.
Yeah, like I said though, it's goofy and fun, and the artwork by Henderson is amazing.
It's also, I would say, it's got its own identity, which is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
As somewhat distinct from the regular
Archie
book. You know, it used to be that kind of all the Archie books carried the same identity. And I think they're letting the creators have their own visions a little bit more on these.
I see that in the next issue blurb, they show him with, like, a little watch, and maybe it looks like there's some time travel thing. So I think they're going to be doing sort of Jughead sort of has his fantasy world elements going on. There's like the Game of Thrones thing in this issue.
But there where could be other ones, like he might imagine himself in Guardians of the Galaxy or something
I think we'll probably be seeing a little bit of him sort of imagining them in other scenarios, which will always be a lot of fun. Nick, what's your cheater pick this week?
My cheater pick is another Marvel book.
Yep.
Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Invincible Iron Man number one. Some of you who know me might be surprised that I picked this because it is written by Brian Michael Bendis.
They'd be more surprised if I picked it.
That's true. It would be like some the oncoming of apocalypse.
Yep.
It'd be on an alternate world where people are alligators and alligators are people.
You know, I was curious to, because I've been hearing some buzz online about some big stuff that occurred in it, especially like a final page reveal that I'm not going to reveal. But
there is sort of,
but there is some big stuff. Notable. But I kind of just like the sort of down to earth feel of it. There's a new threat. Madam Mask has become a bigger threat, which I actually really like Madam Mask. And I kind of liked seeing Tony just kind of interact with a singular character throughout just the entire book for the most part. There's action, don't get me wrong.
Who's the singular character?
It's a romantic interest and sort of a woman that he was trying to change himself. He's trying to reinvent himself, of course, not be the jerk that he always is.
Right.
Of course, he can't do that completely, but she's another doctor or scientist, and they're talking about the things that they shouldn't invent that they have invented,
right?
Which is an interesting conversation. There's actually a huge thing that this person has invented that I we'll see if there are ramifications of that. And this is also the invention of Stark's new armor, which is pretty darn cool, and what it can do.
What I saw of the armor seemed like, I just read a little bit of the explanation flipping through it, and it seemed like it has something of a best of all previous armors, but without going to the crazy place of the sort of nano-robots and stuff.
Right, it can change itself a little bit.
Right.
Into,
I imagine it could be like, it could become the stealth suit, yes, or underwater, yes, suit, or and, you know, whatever.
I'm honestly shocked that we haven't seen that before,
yeah,
in an Iron Man story. Yeah. I think also what made this one, the humor actually hit home for me in a lot of respects.
Bendis does bring funny usually.
And it actually felt genuine. It didn't feel like the same shtick that I've seen before.
I think the thing I like best is the artwork.
Yeah, and I was getting to that. The artwork here is by David Marquez, who he has worked with before.
And he's been good, but this is a step forward. This is a step up.
David Marquez did his Miles Morales stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yes, he did. But yeah, this is definitely a step up. He does action well, just scenery well, you know, Bendis's pages where it's just two people talking well.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of does the best of everything. It's very slick looking, and I'm excited for this book where I had no excitement before. I was just kind of like, okay, I'll read it. It's an Iron Man book. Mm-hmm. But I'm genuinely excited to see what happens next. So, Bendis, you got me.
Dave,
all right, you got me.
Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Star Wars number 10.
Which could easily have been my pick.
Didn't get to read this
it's
one.
It's so good. This book continues to be great.
As always, there's sort of three different interconnecting stories in here, and it seems like they're kind of, several of them are sort of veering closer together now, which in kind of cool ways.
Yeah.
But at the heart of this one really has to be the Chewbacca C-3PO investigation duo.
How has no one ever teamed up Chewbacca and C-3PO again before? Because
what
it's amazing.
Is like sort of a talkative jackass,
yeah,
and a growling violence machine.
Yeah.
and if you can imagine, their investigations are great.
Oh yeah.
It's like funny and cool.
And they're on Narshada. They're on the Hutt's home planet.
Right, right. So this is literally like, you know, like normally superheroes when they like need clues, like Daredevil or something, he goes and beats up some of his dudes in an alleyway or goes into a bar and asks questions. This is kind of what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just that 3PO sometimes isn't quite fully aware of, or sometimes is aware of like what Chewbacca will do.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's spectacular.
Yeah.
The issue also has some cool stuff with Luke in it.
Yeah.
Who's you know, they have to walk that line. He's kind of learning about his Jedi past. He's in a bad spot right now. But they can't have him become like a full-blown Jedi because this is before like even Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
So they have to kind of skirt those lines, but they're doing a really clever job of it.
Yeah.
And then there's a sort of a big reveal near the end that reveals who sort of the next threat is going to be. And it's both revealed by an unusual character. I'm going to say somebody who you would not necessarily think you might want to see, but is kind of used in a cool way. And then the big bad or the new threat is, it's a super cool image of them. It's maybe one of the coolest images I've seen of this character.
Yeah.
So another must read.
Yeah. Fantastic issue. All right. So amongst the other stuff this week, all right. So I've got a lot of number ones. Marvel has a Superhero Spectacular, which is a all-ages book featuring a lot of characters. Guardians, Avengers. If you have kids and they're looking for some, like, so the most popular Marvel stuff, this is a $4 book that's a little sampler of, there's an Avengers story and a Guardians of the Galaxy, and Spider-Man's in there. So all their favorite characters together. Written by Carl Kiesel, who's always good. There is also, from other publishers, Rowan's Ruin, which is a new book from Boom. It's a 4-issue miniseries written by Mike Carey, who you might know from Lucifer or Unwritten. Art by Mike Perkins, who you might know from Captain America and various other things. Really gorgeous, sort of painted-looking, realistic art. And it is about a girl who basically swaps her small apartment in New York for a what may be haunted house in England. And sort of she's living in England and sort of dealing with culture shock and sort of having her sort of post-college adventure. And at the same time, there's some weird sort of haunting, mystical stuff going on. It is really intriguing. It's a good sort of Halloween-themed book. Definitely worth a look. New publisher, American Gothic Press, produces Project Nemesis number 1, which is has art by Matt Frank, who you might know from Godzilla Rules the Earth. It is, as you would expect from Matt, involves kaiju. In fact, it is like a secret government operation that involves maybe some fallen kaiju and some genetic manipulation and that kind of stuff. A lot of investigation. It's kind of a fun first issue. Vertigo produces the first of their new sort of attempted relaunch kind of thing.
Yep.
Where this is a first issue called Survivors Club. It is, again, sort of good Halloween themed. It's about a half dozen characters who've all experienced something in 1986, different tragedies, and there's some sort of haunted computer game that sort of links them all together, and they come together to form sort of a support group, therefore that's named Survivors Club. Mm-hmm. Art is by Ryan Kelly. It's a sort of creepy little tale.
Yeah.
Yep. Image produces several first issues this week. Codename Babushka, which is about a Russian special operative, written by the guy who does The Fuse, Anthony Johnston. Sort of a nice animated comic style look. If you like Black Widow, I want to say this is the kind of thing you probably wanted from a Black Widow book. Saints number 1, which is by a couple creators I didn't know. They have sort of a cool animated-looking art. It's about a rock band that also might be involved in some mystical stuff and almost has sort of a video gamey feel to it. I think people might want to check that out. Accend, which is a new superhero book from Shane Davis, who you might know as the guy who did Superman Earth 1. Then we have the Image stuff that we've seen plenty of before. More further issues of We Stand on Guard number 4, which I loved. Plutona number 2, which was the Teenagers Find a Dead Superhero in the Woods comic, and goes further with that. Copperhead number 10, the sort of space western that we're a big fan of. And then, of course, everything Star Wars came out this week, in that there was, in addition to Star Wars number 10, Darth Vader number 10, which is another great issue of that book. Shattered Empire number 2, which I really liked. Lando number 5. And then Secret Wars wraps up one of my favorite Secret Wars books, Spider Island number 5, with a really strong ending. This is one of my favorite Secret Wars books.
I haven't read that one yet, but I'm glad to hear it ended
strong. I thought it was a really, really good ending. And then in terms of trades and collections, I just want to shout out to Trick or Treat, Days of the Dead. Trick or Treat is one of these anthology movies that came out about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. It was kind of a cult movie, and I'd say it still is a cult movie, but a very highly regarded, very Halloween-y.
Yeah, and I'm not a big horror movie guy, but it turns out Trick or Treat I really liked. It hits that sort of creep show vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is the writer director of Trick or Treat is doing Krampus this Christmas season and is working on a Trick or Treat 2. But in the meantime, He and several of his co-writers and several comic artists, including Saga's Fiona Staples, do four separate stories of sort of Halloween horror in a new graphic novel. Oh, so
that's awesome.
That seems like a comic seemed like a pretty good format for that. What was already, you know, the or you know, they basically created that anthology horror. Even
yeah,
Creepshow itself. This would make sense. Was inherited essentially an adaptation of old tales from the crypt type
yeah.
stuff. So it's kind of an interesting return home
yeah.
for the horror
and
anthology.
They did a Trick or Treat miniseries or graphic novel before, too, with DC, which I think may be coming back into print.
Oh,
so, and then, of course, the Star Wars trade coming out and collects the first story arc of that with John Cassidy and Jason Aaron, which we have raved about over and over and over again and will continue to do so.
If by chance, yeah, you missed it, this is your chance to get on board.
Yep. And finally, a really cool sort of special project that I was excited to pick up, Star Wars The Marvel Covers hardcover. You may remember that there were an ungodly number of special covers for Star Wars, including various comic shops had exclusive variants. I think Hastings had an exclusive variant. So yeah,
the only thing sort of more notable than the sheer number of them was the amount of talent.
Yes. So this hardcover collects every first printing variant of the Star Wars number one, plus Star Wars 2 through 6, Princess Leia 1 through 5, and Darth Vader 1 through 6. There's also interviews with some of the cover artists about their process, interviews with some of the writers about writing Star Wars. It's a neat little behind-the-scenes book with just a ton of beautiful artwork. And it's an oversized hardcover. If you're the kind of people who like this kind of thing, and I definitely am, you will not be disappointed. That is my giganto list. Nick, what's on your giganto list?
Okay, so what do I have that you don't? No, I'm kidding. Batman and Robin Eternal starts up, which is the sort of new book focusing on Dick Grayson, both past and present versions of him as Grayson, the super spy, and as Robin. As things from his past are coming back to haunt him, and sort of as a new terror takes over Gotham, he and his family, Robin, Red Robin,
and other characters in there too. Like,
yeah,
can we? Maybe we don't want to say
Jason Todd. There is another character I will not mention.
Yeah, I don't want to mention, but there's other friends of Batman.
Yep.
Are shown in this, and in a way, it's a sort of a Batman family book.
It is. It's a Batman family book. It was a good first issue.
You know what I thought was interesting is that. When Grayson debuted, I thought it would, like, last a year or two, which, I mean, I guess it hasn't gone super long, but I did not expect them to sort of stick with it.
They're expected running with the idea.
Returning to Nightwing, because, you know, but now the fact that he's alive is now known to people.
Yep.
But he's staying at Grayson Super Spy, and not returning to Nightwing. So we're seeing Grayson teaming up with Superman, Grayson teaming up
right.
with Red Robin, etc. And I thought that's kind of cool because I do enjoy him in that persona. He's still Nightwing, too. I mean, you know,
yeah.
same guy. It's just that he's not doing the costume right at the moment.
Exactly. The sixth issue of Secret Wars hits.
Long delayed.
I will say it was a very satisfying issue. Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, I was a little let down by Secret Wars number 5, which was a lot of world-building backstory stuff.
Yeah.
This seemed to get the story back into gear.
It did, and some really cool stuff.
You know what I noticed, though? The cover still says number 6 of 8, which is no longer accurate.
Nope.
That's actually true. Avengers number 0, which is the first of two anthologies I'll quickly talk about. This one actually focuses on all of the sort of Avengers-themed books.
But what's interesting is, like this in Point One, they do sort of a framing. So it's like
there is a framing device.
It's an anthology in that it features little bits of story from the creative teams of all these new books.
Basically, it's the Squadron Supreme,
yeah.
which is the Justice League analog that Marvel has.
But it's like a multidimensional team.
A multidimensional team. Sort of assessing all the different Avengers teams.
They seem to be doing almost an authority type thing with them, where they're like, they're going to try and solve the world's problems
right.
with their superpowers.
Which is interesting, and I'll see, it'll be fun to see the different Avengers teams butt heads.
You know, it's funny, Randy, you said an authority thing, but in fact, it's a Squadron Supreme thing.
Yeah, that's
Mark
true.
Greenwald's
that's
famous
true.
80s story,
yep.
which was like that with the sort of the first somewhat serious treatment of the notion of superheroes trying and sometimes failing or dying while trying to change the world.
Yeah.
But we get our first glimpses of things like New Avengers, which is the Sunspot-led Avengers team where he has basically taken control of AIM and now uses that to the Avengers' benefit. The
A-Force, which is the book from Secret Wars, focusing on a character, which I can't remember her name, the sort of ethereal Captain Universe character.
Yeah.
And also we get Uncanny Avengers, which is the Steve Rogers, old man Steve Rogers-led Avengers team that has Deadpool in it, because mm-hmm. that's what most people wanted. And the little story is about Deadpool.
I'll have to say,
and it was a good one. I thought it was fun. Also, Ultimates number one, which is the Blue Marvel, Black Panther, Miss Marvel, Miss America, and Photon, or however you want to call her at this point. And then, of course, the Squadron Supreme stuff. And honestly, the Squadron Supreme stuff was the stuff
that was the most framing sequence. Yeah, me too. There's also a little bit of Vision in
there
here.
There is a little bit of Vision.
Vision and Scarlet Witch, both of whom will have their own series that sort of hints at their current status quo and what's going to change, and is a really effective story, actually.
It is an effective story, but like I said, it's a really good book if you want to sort of glimpse all these different stories. Like Randy said, these aren't going to be reprinted until the trades.
Yeah, trades will have them. Yeah,
this is not sort of the first part of the first issue. This is something different.
Right.
The next sampler is Point One, or Marvel Point One. All new, all different Marvel Point One. I guess I should be...
Right, yes. Because they've done a few of these.
Yes, and the framing device on this one is sort of the Contest of Champions book.
Right.
Which is the Collector and... Maestro sort of selecting heroes for teams to fight each other.
Yeah.
Which I'll get to more about Contest of Champions in a second.
Yep.
But this gives us a look at things like Uncanny Inhumans, or no, All New Inhumans.
Right.
The Crystal-led story. Carnage. S.H.I.E.L.D., which I actually really liked the S.H.I.E.L.D. Story.
Good, good.
The Rocket and Groot book, which I thought was... imagine Rocket and Groot coming to Earth during Halloween. And then you can kind of see where I'm going with that. There's also a look at Daredevil, which, man, Ron Garney's artwork is beautiful.
That's good to hear.
It's gorgeous.
I haven't had a chance to read this one week yet, because again, it was a big week, but this was on my list.
I was just flipping through and I saw the artwork in that, and I have to say, it's the best art I've ever seen from Ron Garney. And what's more, there was like a bit more... stylishness to it than I expected. Stylishness in kind of a it's really hard to describe way, but almost the way that I would say Jock is a stylish artist.
Yeah.
And I usually think of Ron Garney as sort of a bit meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
Very, very a good meat and potatoes.
Hey, I like meat and potatoes.
Yeah. but this is definitely his best work.
But I also like sushi. Yeah. And it's more like his sushi artwork.
But yeah, that is that sampler. I will continue on.
Yep, just do that.
This one's really... Both the samplers are actually really, really worth it.
Yeah.
You get great stories. You get effective stories. Like Randy was saying, the Avengers number zero, the Wanda and Vision story is really, really good. And there are some of the same ones. The Inhumans book and the Marvel Point One, there's some stuff with Crystal that's actually really well done character
work.
I
like her new bob.
Yeah, her actually new outfit is really cool.
It's a good look.
The next one I have is the Contest of Champions number one, which is sort of... I mean, it is a tie-in to the iOS video game of the same name, but this one... I have never read the original Contest of Champions, so...
I have never read it, and it is reprinted this week. You can get the whole thing.
You haven't read it, Randy.
But that was from the 80s?
Yeah, it was from 1980 or 81.
And it
was... I mean, essentially it was the Grandmaster and, I forget, one of the other Elders of the Universe. They were kind of doing a... they had the wager, and it's almost like classic Star Trek tradition. It wasn't the what is greater, good or evil, but it was some kind of... something like that where... the heroes weren't necessarily fighting each other, but trying to... You know how in G.I. Joe, in the G.I. Joe 80s cartoons, that like the Weather Dominator would blow up and be scattered to the four corners of the earth, and they'd go off in small teams to find it?
Yep.
It's almost more like that, but where like different teams of heroes might be have to outdo different teams of heroes to literally acquire these magical objects, sort of.
It was also famous, or perhaps infamous, for creating... They were trying to create international Marvel heroes.
Yeah.
All of whom were the most cliched, like, the Irish character was Shamrock, the French hero was Le Peregrine.
Right.
They were all sort of... and they do that in here, too, but I liked their creations.
I actually did, too. I thought that all the new creations, I'm like, can we have more of that?
And they brought in the British Punisher, Outlaw, who I guess... I don't remember this character. You might know him, Nick.
I
I thought it might be an original
character. I don't think so. I think he's
actually an established character. Yeah. But yes, they do use him. They bring in some other characters. There's a French hero.
Who I liked a lot. I thought that was a really neat character.
But also dealing with sort of... it's Collector, right? Or is it Grandmaster?
It's the Collector.
Collector and Maestro, which is basically... One of the lead people in here, something happens in Secret Wars where he becomes sort of this extra-dimensional threat.
He was a big threat in the future, but that is a new level.
Well, keep in mind, the Collector was a big deal in the Guardians movie, so it's not surprising that Marvel will be trying to sort of reposition him a little bit.
Right. But we also see Gamora, Iron Man, and it actually does look like this, the new Invincible Iron Man.
It does,
Fighting, like... A Joe Fixit, which I thought was awesome.
This was a lot of fun, and the artwork by Paco Medina is fantastic.
Yeah, I have to say this. For what is essentially a video game tie-in, this is a level I have not seen before.
No, it's a really fun book. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did.
Injustice was good.
That's actually a good comparison. I would put it on the level of that.
Yeah.
You get great character moments.
Yeah.
You get fun action bits. It's all very satisfying in the same way.
Maybe in a new era where video game comics might actually occasionally rise above. If there's superhero tie-ins, though.
Well,
the other video game comics still remain kind of...
You know, Larry Hama's going to be writing the new Call of Duty, so that'll be a test case. We'll see.
And then a few other minor books. The final issue of Secret Wars Old Man Logan comes in. I haven't had a chance to read this.
We're almost wrapped on everything Secret Wars, aren't we? Except for the actual main book.
Yep. Grumpy Cat, which sees a number one. But it's Grumpy Cat and Pokey. Because you have to have the balance.
It's like having the straight man and the...
Yeah.
And the comic.
Haven't had a chance to read this one, but I flipped through it. I thought the art was good.
It's definitely an all-ages comic.
It's adorable.
It's one of those...
He is next-gen Garfield. He's Garfield 2.0. Yep. So I think that's going to be one that a lot of kids are actually going to enjoy.
He's grumpy.
He is grumpy. And then there's...
No. That was in honor of him. Pray continue now.
And then there's two what-if books.
Yeah.
They're What If Infinity. One is Thanos number one, and one is Inhumans number one.
And this is basically spinning off the Infinity event for a few years ago, right?
Like a what-if things changed in that event. And there's... A lot of the what-if books are kind of written off. They're not fantastic.
Yeah.
The reason I'm kind of excited for these is the writer, which is Joshua Williamson.
I think he's writing all five.
He's writing all five. This is the guy who's writing one of our favorite books, is Birthright.
Yep.
He'll be writing the new... what's the book with the villains?
Illuminati.
Illuminati. But, you know... The Inhumans one has artist Riley Rosmo on it.
Yep.
It looks gorgeous. And I believe this other one, and I thought I recognized the artist in here too, but I might not. No, it's Mike Henderson, which I'm not familiar with. But anyways, it looks really cool. I have a lot of faith in him as a writer, so I'm excited to read.
You know, the What If books, they changed how they used to be titled with a single concept.
Yeah.
You know, what if Dark Phoenix had lived? And
what if
stuff
Punisher
like that.
Killed Daredevil?
Right. And I was thinking, like, there is lots of stuff that they could pick nowadays
that
may be within those books, but it's not in the title. Like, you know, you could do a What If Dr. Octopus Had Not Relinquished Spider-Man's Body?
Right.
I think that'd be kind of cool. People would want to then know the original stories, and I'm not weirdly... I think blanketing these with the event titles almost feels too heavy-handed.
I agree. I think this one will be fun, but I think as a general rule, I wish they'd go back to an ongoing series of what-ifs that were usually by the creative teams of the original stories.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And do sort of some of those. Like, the What If Superior Spider-Man is the one I'd really like to see.
Yeah.
What if Spider-Verse had turned out differently, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of stuff.
I want to see the oddball stories. I like those.
I mean, there's so many things. Even you can even go back to stuff like in Runaways, you know, some of the stuff with Alex.
Yeah.
So many different possibilities.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I don't think we're in a market where... It's kind of like Marvel Universe. We're not in a market where that's going to be done, but
right.
I think it could be.
I agree that it's unlikely.
It's too bad.
I do not have anything else to add, as y'all have in your giant stacks covered everything that I had to
all right.
immediately.
I am sorry I took up all your books.
That's all right. Let's get off my teeth. I'm watching you, Nick. I'm watching you.
Well, that is our coverage of a giganto week of comics. There's a lot of stuff. As mentioned at the top of the show, this would be a good week if you've been toying with getting a rogue card to possibly get a rogue card, because the odds are that you're going to be a bunch of picks that you would save some money on.
Yep.
We'll see you guys in the store. We are probably not going to do topics this week just because we ran a little long on comics and news.
Right.
But we'll be back next week. We might cover some Halloween comics and movies and stuff.
Yes.
And some other stuff that's going on. And until next time,
Yo Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.